I'm Kevin, I'm an alcoholic.
Kevin, yes.
I left my big book back there too. I'm nervous. But it's going to be all right. My sobriety date is August 8th, 2015. I got a sponsor. He's got a sponsor, and my home group is the alumni group in Athens, Georgia. Thank you. I was born in Lancaster, South Carolina, and small town, and I can't blame my drinking on a bad childhood, because my mom and dad worked and took care of me and gave me everything that I needed in life, not what I wanted, but what I needed. And I had a sister that was 2 years younger, and but in school it was I knew the big classes and the crowds and stuff, I always just felt like I didn't fit in, and people made fun of me. And it started from when I was playing ball, t-ball. I used to wear my these I got made fun of at 5 years old, and I carried that all the way till I was 42 years old, that insecurity. But I didn't know it. I wouldn't tell you that. But these called me Big Ears and Chrome Dome. So I said, I got a solution to that. I'll fix that. So when I first got sober, I wore my hat over my ears and backwards. And the reason I wore it over my ears all the time is because I knew back then if I wore the hat over my ears, they couldn't make fun of my big ears, they called me, or have a chrome dome because they can't see it. So that feeling of insecurity and not liked or never being a part of. I wasn't dumb in school, but I acted dumb, and so they got the slower class, the people that ain't as smart, and they got smaller classes, 10 to a group instead of 30 in a classroom. So I went to the slow learners class, and but I hated school. It wasn't that I hated school. I hated being seen and not feeling a part of. So, going up through school, I quit when I was 16 and went to work in a cotton mill. That's what I said, man, I just want to quit and go to work. And because my whole family, everybody worked in textile plant, and that's where everybody went to work. So I thought I was a big dog when I went to work in the cotton mill at 16 years old. And I worked there for about 3 years, and at 19, I was hanging out with this crowd of people. You get in trouble by hanging out with people that you ain't even got to do nothing wrong and be with somebody and get in trouble. I was riding around with these two guys, and I was talking to this girl that went to Winthrop College, and I never met these two guys, and they said, man, we need to go by the bank and cash our checks before we go out tonight. And at this time, I never drank nothing in my life till I was 29 years old. And so I was hanging out with them. They went by 3 ATMs. I was like, man, why didn't y'all just get all that out of one bank? And they come up with some excuse and tell me. Next thing I know is the next day, the police told me to turn around and put my hands behind my back. They locked me up for forgery. They had forged 3 checks. And when you go through the ATM machine, it takes a picture every time you go through there. I didn't know that neither. So I got in trouble, got put on probation for that. And I had never put my name on nothing. I was like, wow. My daddy told me, son, you better stay away from them people like that. Growing up, people that he knew I wasn't doing right, don't hang out with that crowd. I did anyways. So I got married. They sent me to, I'd done 6 months in jail for that. When I got out, I was raised in church. I had perfect attendance at this church. For 15 years, my daddy made me go to church. And he said, I couldn't stand it. I hated it. And he was like, son, as long as you stay in this house and you eat at my table, you're going to go to church. When you get old enough and get a job to where you can move out, you ain't got to go no more. So 16, when I got a job, I moved out. So I had a bad attitude towards religion. And But when I got in trouble and done them 6 months, I was like, that kind of like woke me up a little bit, like made me start thinking. So I went back to the same church and wanted to change my life, and I'm going to get back on a good path. And I went there about a month, and I met my ex-wife, and like I realized my whole life, every relationship I ever did in my life, I took them hostage, is what I did. It was like I did not know what caring and loving somebody really meant. I just used them for what I could get from them. And that's pretty much everybody in my life, is what I did. I was good at manipulating and deceiving and lying. I thought I was. But I wasn't really hurting nobody but myself. So she got pregnant after 9 months after we were together. And her dad said, "You got that girl pregnant? You gonna marry that girl?" And so I did. And but I worked cotton mill to cotton mill back then. They shut all the cotton mills down. But I always wanted to drive an 18-wheeler. That's what I wanted to do, like when I was growing up. I was like, that's my dream job. So the first sign that I knew that God was real in my life is when I went to this truck driving institution school to get a CDL. And you got to have good credit or a co-signer to get in it. But they'll let anybody sign up. In the first week, they'll let you know, like by that Friday, whether you approved or not. They're just calling everybody up there and telling them whether it was approved or not. And most everybody was being kicked out. And I was like, man, ain't nobody gonna sign for me. And I know I ain't got no good credit. Well, they called me up there on a Friday. And they said, "Kevin, we just want to let you know that your class is paid in full, and that you'll be going through this 3-week." Class. I was like, really? And they said, yeah, and the person that like paid for it said, if we tell you who did it, that they would not make this check no good. They didn't want to be told. To this day, I still don't know who did that. I couldn't wrap my brain around that. So, and me and my ex-wife got married on 9/11. What a day that was. And I strike out on this truck driving job, and my daughter's a couple years old, and I've been to every big city in this, and at this time, I had never drank a drop in my life. Like, my papa was an alcoholic, my mama's dad, and I said, I won't never be like him. Because I seen that man, like, every month he drawed a check. And he drank, I'm talking about would like drink it all the way. And he's probably the best man I ever met in my life. I didn't know alcoholics, like I thought that was like an alcoholic like that, just drank and like, but these people that drink every day, they got houses and they got cars. And when I first come into Alcoholics Anonymous, if you didn't lose nothing or if you ain't under a bridge or this and that, I was like, man, they ain't like me. I used to judge everybody instead of like seeing what I could relate to. And I used to think mine was always worse than everybody else's. Everything was either worse or it was 10 times better. On 9/11, I was in Brooklyn, New York when them planes hit, getting unloaded. And that was me and my wife's anniversary. And I was like, man, I thought the world was coming to an end. It was bad. Like, this is it. I came home that week and I didn't drive a truck no more over the road. That's how bad it scared me. And but my, like, before I ever took a drink, this is the guy that I was, like, to my wife. Like that check that I would make, I didn't pay no bills with it. When my daughter was like raised up and born, I didn't like buy Christmas, birthdays, diapers, food. This is way before I ever took a drink. And that, I'm just letting you know that's what kind of man that I was before, because it ain't just about drinking. Like, but I used to start, like, I used to think it was. I did it because I drank. But I found out that the isms is like what makes me drink. And so December 2003 on Christmas Eve day, man, I had a panic attack. I don't know if y'all ever had one of them or not, but I thought I was dying. And that was the day that my dad's family, they always meet and have a Christmas dinner together once a year. Like, they go all year long and don't even see each other. And then one time a day out of the year, they're going to have, like, we've been seeing each other and we've got the greatest relationship and we're close as all get out. And I don't even like talking to them people. They didn't really like talk to me much because they knew this. They knew who I really was about, like, being lazy and not doing what a man's supposed to do for his wife and kids. And so that caused me to be not okay around them people. But I wasn't okay around nobody where I went. So it didn't, you know, so it was just like anywhere else. And I had a panic attack and went to the hospital. And they said, we can't find nothing wrong with you. I was up there for 8 hours. I was like, oh, there's something wrong with me. I went for like 6 months, hospital, like, they can't find nothing wrong with me. That's what they said. I started going, I said, well, I'm going to go to a different hospital. I went to Charlotte, North Carolina, to the biggest hospital up there. That man said, you have anxiety, panic attacks. I said, what's that? He's like, you stressed out about something. I was like, no, I ain't. He gave me this whole, now drugs is in my story, but I don't talk about it in Alcoholics Anonymous because of traditions. Just other things. It's all the same problem. It's the same solution is what I've learned. But he gave me this pill of Xanax, and that's all I'm going to say about that. But 10 minutes, it was gone. That feeling was gone. I said, boy, that's a miracle pill right there. And I was 29 years old. And I never forgot what that pill done for me. Like, and they don't like to, like, write that out too much. So it was caught anxiety and that depression and anxiety and stuff. It was the beginning of me drinking, because I lost, like, my family and all that stuff. Said, ain't nothing wrong with you. And it came eventually, like, where I didn't say nothing about nobody what was going on with me. And I bottled it in, and I started drinking. When I was it was in June of 2003 when I started drinking. And by October, I was doing them both. And wife done left, mom, like, everybody pretty much done left. And November the 7th rolled around. Little did I know that day was going to be a life changer. So that day I got pulled over, and I had been drinking and doing other stuff, and I got in trouble with the law, fighting the police and all kind of crazy stuff. I don't even remember what I did, really. I went to jail that day, and at this time, I had lost, like, nobody wanted, like, family, nobody had anything to do with me. Wife gone, kid gone, car gone, vehicle, license, and all gone. So I go to court, and They gave me 8 years in South Carolina Department of Corrections. But my daddy had told me that first time when I went. He said, don't call me if you ever go back down here. We helped you this time, and I ain't writing you. I ain't coming to see you. I ain't visiting you. But I didn't believe him. Boy, he did what he said, because he, no letters, no phone call, no visit, no nothing, no honey buns, because if you in jail and somebody don't send you some money and put it on your books, you ain't eating no honey buns. Now, I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous in 2009. And the first guy I ever met, and there was a guy named Bradley. He's my best friend today. And I went to this place called the Owl's Nest, and it's like a big boot camp. Boy, this book right here, the whole time you're there for 160 days, I was there for 160 days. It's really a 120-day program, 4 months. I had to stay longer because I figured they needed more of it than what they was offering. I learned this book, the first 164 pages. I could quote it and tell you what page it was on, what paragraph it was on. And I could not stay sober. I couldn't wrap my brain around that. I got out of there from 2009 to 2015. The knowledge, I said, oh, I know what's wrong now. I know what to do. I would go to AA meetings, man. And if they weren't like, people weren't sharing what this book said, like, I'd be like, that ain't what the book says. And these people been sober for 10, 15, 20 years, and I couldn't put 2 days together, and I'm trying to tell them how to stay sober. Yeah. And I would go back out, and that's exactly what they would do when I come back in. They would look at me and smile and laugh. But I did not think that was too funny. I was mad. And in between that first time going to jail and going to this treatment center, that's the only one I've ever been to, too, treatment center, but I went to 14 mental hospitals in between there. And I thought I was like, ain't nobody in this world like me. This is that, like, they don't got what I got. And I was homeless for 4 years on the streets of Charlotte, North Carolina. They call it the Queen City. And like, everybody, my family, everybody I know, my family is only like 35 miles down the road, and there's nobody coming. And when I went to, in the big book, you know, at these steps, I knew way before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. When I started drinking, I can't stop. I knew that way before I got here. But I didn't know why I kept doing it when I did not want to do it no more. Because I said, I woke up a bunch of times, I am not drinking today. And I meant that. Like, I could have passed a lighter test if you hooked me up to it. But I drank. I did not know that, like, something that had that much power over you can make you do something against your own will. And going to this place, and but before I went to that place, in prison, in this big book, you know, these steps. I'm gonna read it right quick. It's talking about doing a fifth step. Perhaps this is difficult, especially discussing our defects with other persons. We think we have done well enough admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a self-solitary appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We would be more reconciled to discuss ourselves with another person when we see good reason why we should do this. The best reason first. This is the best reason why I should do this. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humble experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wonder why they fail. We think the reason that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves, but they had not learned enough humility, fearlessness, honesty in the sense we found it necessary until they told someone their whole life story. And man, I went to that place and I took the steps a bunch of times. I'd done a bunch of 4 steps. And like, man, I was helping people and I was making amends to people. And I couldn't stay sober. I didn't know why, like, it wasn't working. And when I, and this is one, this is why. When they gave me them 8 years, the third day when I went to the shower that night, I got raped by two black men. I was going to never tell a soul that. Nobody. And in 2015, when I showed up, knowing that I hadn't ever told that. You ever heard this? The worst thing that's ever happened to you is the best asset you got to help somebody. I didn't understand that till now, till I got sober. But I could, when I told that, and I wrote that down, man, I've been sober ever since. What they gonna think about me? It don't matter what they think. Do I care what people think? Absolutely. And somebody says that they don't care what somebody else thinks, they lied. Because every human being on this planet has feelings. And we do care, because that's just another lie that I used to believe. This is what, I heard this growing up. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never harm me. That's one of the biggest lies I ever heard. Yeah, because it does hurt. I went to 87 halfway houses from 2009 to 2015 in five different states. Like, who goes to 87 halfway houses? People said, and I didn't have a vehicle or no license or nothing, no car. I didn't drive. I didn't have no license for 14 years. Since that November the 7th, no license. That was in 2004. No license for that long. How do you go to five different states and 87 halfway houses? And I didn't have a job to get in none of them. Like, they'll let you in because they trying to help people. But then, you know, you got to get a job and you got to get up and go to a meeting, and they give you a little minute to try to help you. And when time to pay the rent came, like when the heat was too much, I'm out. I'm gone. I was a runner. I run from like everything in my life, and I hadn't talked to my family in over 6 years. Hadn't seen my daughter, and I still hadn't seen my daughter. And she's 20. She was 10 then. 17 years, yeah. And I ended up in Athens, Georgia. I thought it was just another stopping off place. I ain't kidding, it's just like, this is another recovery house. I won't be here long. And I done the same thing I done at all 86 of them before. And I was in Athens, Georgia. You know, Athens, Georgia is a party town. Only thing I knew about Athens when I got there is that's where Georgia Bulldogs is from. That's it. But I didn't know how good recovery was there. Yeah, some good recovery. It's the best place I've ever been to. These meetings all day, every day. So this guy gave me a job painting, and I ain't never painted in my life, ever. But I said I know how to paint. Yeah, buddy. I know how to do everything. And but the first day I went to work there, guess what? He knew I didn't know how to paint. But that dude's an alcoholic too, man. He's sobering. He understood doing that. And I ended up in March. It was March, and went to work for this guy. And before I moved to Athens, the only job that I could get in South Carolina, because they do a background check, you know, at companies. And every time I filled out an application, yeah, they called me the third day. Kevin, we can't hire you. And you got a background. And I lie on every one of them. No, I ain't never had no felony. And they say, would you like to know what's on? I like the first one I played dumb. Yeah, boy, they know exactly what's on there. So this guy told me, said, and it wasn't about AA. He said, this might be a better opportunity for you in Athens. So I went, but before I went there, McDonald's, Burger King, or Huddle House, that's the only place that would give me a job. And I was like, man, if this is all life wants to give me is a $7.25 job, and that's it. Man, it's like, it ain't worth it. So I get there and I went from $7.25 to $12 an hour, and I ain't never painted. I was like, boy, that is a good opportunity, wasn't it? And I stayed drunk from March to August the 1st. And I couldn't do it no more. I was done dealing. It didn't matter where I went, who I was around, how much money I had, what girl I talked to, but I thought if I got all that, I'd be good. When I got everything that I wanted, I still wasn't okay. Like where it talks about in that steps, if only this world would do as I wish, and things would just stay put, and it'd be great, life'd be grand. And then when it happened, it still wasn't grand. And that guy that was like gonna teach, that taught me how to paint, I left. And chasing a woman, I ain't never met her before. She down there in Macon, Georgia, at the time, and I have never met her before in my life, but I sure went to see her. And got off the bus, and Perry, Georgia's like right next door down there, Warner Robins, and that was on a Sunday, and this girl dropped me off on a Monday morning in Perry, Georgia, and she didn't ever come back. I was used to that. That's done happened a bunch of times before. Women was the same way in my life, just like a drug was. Like in that big book talks about, I need an overhauling. Boy, I sure did. And because I wouldn't leave him alone. And everybody, like that dude Bradley, is still my friend, and people in recovery, boy, you better leave the women alone. I didn't listen to them. They told me why. But in the big one says, you know, we don't want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. You can't tell me what to do in that. They didn't care what that book said. They said, boy, you need to leave the women alone. And they didn't care nothing about my feelings, because they care more about me living. And boy, they would hurt my feelings. And I ended up in Perry, Georgia now. I knowed a bunch of people in recovery from five different states, and a bunch of halfway houses. Boy, you gotta come up with a bunch of phone numbers and people that you've seen in meetings and stuff. And boy, there wasn't nobody coming. Nobody was coming. And man, I'm down here on the streets of Perry, Georgia. I don't even know where I'm at. And the last phone call I got, the last one to answer the phone I called, I was like, yeah, boy, this is my last chance. Here it come. And this is what he told me when he answered. I got an AA hotline number for you. Boy, I did not want to hear that. That's the best words that I've probably been told. Because I can say what that book said in the steps, but it became reality right then. Like, man, there ain't nobody coming. And what you gonna do? It was like step one. It says, and our lives become unmanageable. How much more unmanageable could my life get? None. Dying would be the next one. And I didn't want to hear nothing about this power, because I hated his guts, because of what happened to me in the penitentiary. Because if he loved me, he wouldn't let that happen to me. But I believed that my friend Bradley believed. I believed that this God he was talking about to me. So he said, make a decision. And I made a decision to walk from Perry, Georgia to Anderson, South Carolina. I walked. because he had been telling me for 2 years, up, and But all before that, like in 2013, he'd come rescue me. Well, he'd come all the way across the state, come pick me up, take me to this recovery house. But from 2013 to 15, he wasn't coming. He'd answer that phone, but he ain't coming to do nothing for me, because he knew he couldn't do it. He ain't had the power to get me sober, or he couldn't make me do nothing. I walked to his house and knocked on his door that morning. I was looking rough. And man, I prayed out to this God, like, I don't know who you are. I heard about you. I read about you. And I seen what people said you've done in their lives, but I do not know who you are. Please help me, though. And please serve me up, son, that you are real. So that day, there's this miracle, it's called Miracle Hill Rescue Mission in Spartanburg, South Carolina. And, it was like 2 hours away. I didn't even know if they had a bed or not. Went up there and there'd been two guys sitting there all day long waiting to get that bed, and I come up there and, man, they give me that bed. They didn't give it to them guys. I was like, wow, okay. That's just a coincidence. And I was in a recovery house when I got drunk, you know, I was talking about back before, and I was, that guy painting, was teaching me how to paint. He said, you won't never be allowed in my house again, ever. I was at the homeless shelter, and 2 weeks later he called me out of the blue on a Friday. He said, man, you think you'll stay sober in my house? I said, I had no idea. He said, that's the best answer you could have given me. He said, because you'd have told me how you was going to do it and all this. He said, I'd have hung the phone up on you. He said, I got a bed if you want it. That was on the next day. That was when South Carolina was playing Georgia, and he was going to the game, and I walked up on the force. He said, your bed's upstairs. And I said, yes, sir. He said, I don't believe nothing you say. You a liar. You have to earn that. I didn't say a word. And that Monday, I walked till 6 o'clock that evening. It was hot. I walked Tuesday and Wednesday too, like putting application in anywhere I could to get a job. I came home that third day and he said, found a job? I said, no, sir. He said, why not? I said, I don't know. He said, man, call that dude, Gus. You had a paint job since you come back, but I was going to see how willing you was to just humble yourself and work anywhere. So I went back to work. And, 6 months later, that man, like, I was collecting everybody's rent in this house, and there's 11 men there, $130 a week. And I was going to put it in his banking account. I got a driver's license after 14 years. I'm still painting. I hadn't been in a relationship since August 8th of 2015. None. That's a miracle in itself right there, I'm here to tell you. Because I could not talk to them. Like, I'd get their phone up. And these steps, they are, and that guy that I was talking about, I did not know that this book right here and what them steps in that book says is life changing. I just thought it was a bunch of good book. And I was sharing Bill Wilson's experience. That's Bill Wilson's experience in the steps, what he did back then. And I was like going to meet and sharing down with everybody what Bill Wilson did, and I had no experience in myself, none. So I had moved out of the recovery house and moved into my own place with my name on the lease, first time ever, 42 years old. And that's how I met Trey, playing golf. I didn't even know who he was. He just come up there one day, and my roommate was like, come back from the golf course. He said, man, we was playing golf, and we was on such and such hole, and I think one of them hit the ball out of bounds or in the woods or something. He said, keep coming back. And he said, well, where'd you hear that at? And they played around, and he come home and told me about it, and the next time he came up and go play golf, he invited me to go. And the next time he came up, he took me to a Georgia football I got a relationship with my mom and daddy. It's unbelievable. I got a truck out there that I got a title for it. First time I ever had owned a vehicle in my life. That's crazy. Man, at 42 years old when I showed up, that thing's like, it's like I'm, I called my daddy when I started. I said, Daddy, man, I'm 42 years old and I'm doing what an 18-year-old is doing. Like, and I didn't even know you had to do that. I didn't know you had to get up and go to work every day. I mean, to get up and go to work, why would, and everybody does it. And I'm the only one thinking I ain't got to do it. I love get up and go to work today. I love people. But I could not tell you that when I first got here because I hated everybody in here. Because I hated myself. And that's them secrets. Fake it till you make it. Fake what? Like, y'all tell me I need to be honest. Because I come through the door a bunch of them places, they'd be like, how you doing? I'm fine. I'm good. They'd be dying on the inside. But I wouldn't tell you that. I'd be like, I'm fine. But y'all tell me to be honest. Like, I didn't know how to be honest. I didn't know what the truth was myself. What I thought was the truth was so far from the truth, it wasn't even funny. But them steps will show you the truth. My daughter's is the only one that, I made amends to her. I was willing to. She's the one like in the book where it says they might throw you out of the office. Yeah, because she sure threw me out of the office. And I was mad at her that whole time and for something she's right about. I wasn't mad when she threw me out of the office. Because she's right. The truth, it hurts. Hey, y'all just hear the truth will set you free. It will. But it's going to hurt in the process. I moved out of that place, my apartment, and moved back into that same recovery house and the man, so I could be a service work there to them fellas. Because it ain't about money and material stuff in this world, and that don't make me happy. And where it talks about Bill Wilson said, when all else fails, when you done went to a meeting, you done called your sponsor, you done prayed, working with another alcoholic saved the day. Then it says this, ain't gonna be a coming time, right? I can't talk to my father. And I ain't at no meeting, and ain't nobody around. The only thing that's gonna save me from a drink is this power. Now, the disease of alcoholism, I call it disease of alcoholism. It, whatever, devil, you, whatever you want to call it, it's all bad. It was trying to like not me come, let me come here today. It was like virtually impossible to find Woodstock, Georgia. I'm here to tell you. It was like, I just started this job last Monday in Norcross. Traffic down here is horrible. And Trey had asked me to come speak a couple months ago, and I was going to come. And then last night, I was going to the motel room. I thought it was over there by the airport in Atlanta. And I went from Norcross all the way to the airport. Hey, you hit the wrong one. I done rode 30 miles. You got to turn around and go back this way. Then I get there and it's like, I couldn't get in the room. It was making it impossible to get in there. Man. First thing that popped in my head, boy, I'm tired. I done worked all day. I drive home and go sleep in my own bed, you know? Instead of like, just sit still, man. If you don't know what to do, if you sit still, the answers will come. Like, but I used to panic and run, like, cause it ain't happening my way. And man, I got in the room and I slept like a baby, man. This morning he said, you on the way? Nope, I ain't left yet. I didn't even know where this place was at. And I'm glad y'all allowed me to come tell my story. And because this is what I live for. And we want to play some golf sometime today. Man, that's awesome. People would call you. Hey, man, we can come tell your story. I'm going to play some golf. Because I didn't have nobody when I got here. And I could lose it just like that. If I think that I'm somebody, or I got this, or, oh, I got this truck and I got it done now and slack up on it. Because I got a lot of buddies that die, man. And this program is here. And this disease is killing people. And I'm grateful to be sober. Thank y'all.